Thank you, Penny. It's interesting, in the lobby here, there's a list of the conferences and other events that are going on in the hotel, and I see this is Colin McCarthy's conference. But when we were in San Antonio, it had the Ministry Symposium and the Cattle Ranchers Convention. And it was amazing because all these Stetsons and cowboy boots and everything wandering around the same hotel as us. Well, there you are, it's your conference.
Well, actually, yesterday it said colon McCarthy.
So it's one better today. Brilliant. In case you hadn't worked it out, on the back of your programme, I am the very hierarchical, clerical-looking person with a short bio at the bottom there. And as Penny said, and I hope this comes through, even though I'm talking a bit about provincial and diocesan stuff and structures, I hope my commitment to mission-shaped ministry development and my passion for faith development for all people in congregations of all styles and interests and growing disciples, I hope that comes through somehow. So I've been asked to tell our diocesan story and how, even within our structures, we can aim to be mission-shaped and collaborative. And of course, this is the story of the Diocese of Edinburgh. But I think what I would like to do is get rid of some of these bits of paper. It's not start at the beginning of that story, whatever that might be, but to use some words that were used very recently, I think just a couple of weeks ago, at our Autumn Diocesan Synod. And at that synod, we introduced a new process for all the congregations in the diocese called Mission and the Local Church. And these were the words that were used to introduce this. When asked, what is mission? A child replied, mission is about going on a big adventure. She was right. Mission is the big adventure God sends us on. And this big adventure includes everything we do because we are followers of Jesus. Our mission is to worship God and to grow in holiness. It is to love and serve God, our neighbour. Mission is, as Rowan Williams once said, finding out what God is doing and joining in. The Scottish Episcopal Church, of which we are a part, places mission at its heart. In our own diocese, a recent survey underlined not only how our congregations see their mission, but also suggested ways in which that mission might be encouraged and supported. And mission and the local church, this process emerges from that survey. It is offered to help congregations to discern what God is calling them to be and do where they are. It's flexible and it's intended to move us to action. Two things to note in it. The first is that it asks us to pay attention. Pay attention to God, to one another, and to the world we live in. An attentiveness that is fed and sustained by prayer. Because it is prayer that opens us to God and helps us to see God's world with God's eyes. It is prayer that enables us to search out and take ownership of God's call. And the second, of course, is to remind us that the church is about much more than our congregations. Every congregation is going to be encouraged to use this resource or something like it. And the bishop ended by saying, I am eager to know what you discover about your priorities and to celebrate with you at different moments on your journey. I want to be part of a church on the move, drawing from the deep wells of Christian tradition, but also discovering how the Spirit calls us into newness and springs surprises on us. This is what it means to go on an adventure. Adventures are unpredictable, daunting, frightening, exhilarating. Which is exactly what it was like for me getting back on a bike after 25 years, just last month when I was on holiday. But the reason I show you that is because it was scary. I knew I was going to wobble, and I knew there was going to be bits where I might almost come off, but I didn't. But it was an adventure, but something in me was transformed by doing that. Can't explain it, but it was a transforming experience. And God's adventure is no different. We have a lot of food, resources, one another for the journey, but a lot of the journey we have to go on is unmarked. And all that we know is God does not expect us to make that journey alone. I will come back to mission in the local church later. And at that same synod, there was an almost unanimous vote, commitment, to reshape our whole budget to enable us to employ a full-time mission officer to help resource and encourage this work within the diocese. But as we look to the future and the adventures before us, it made me think, well, what is the road that we've travelled to get us to this point? And I hope you don't mind if I just, first of all, try to put the Diocese of Edinburgh into some kind of context. Because where are we? Well, along with England and Wales and Ireland, we're that tiny, tiny blob just above the words Europe. Helps to give us a perspective, doesn't it? And Scotland, of course, is even further north than Manchester. And some of you come from much further south. The great thing about maps is people really often don't know where to put the Shetland Islands. And this one's even more bizarre than usual because the Shetland Islands are halfway to America. And I'm sure that you all know that's really not where they are. This is a map of our province, of the Scottish Episcopal Church and her seven dioceses. Shetland's now in the right place, right up in the northeast, a good hour's flight from Aberdeen. So it's as far to Shetland, it's in the Diocese of Aberdeen, as it is to get to London from there. So that gives you a sense of distance. And as I said, like the Church of England, the Church of Wales, the Church of Ireland, we are a distinct province within the Anglican Communion. And we can trace our history back to the earliest known Christians in Scotland. And as our good friends from Selkirk said yesterday, and I must just say, this is not a takeover by the Diocese of Edinburgh.
Why not?
but we might just allow that to happen. I didn't actually know till a couple of days ago that you were going to be here. So that's been a great joy. So it was not intentional, but it might have been God's work. But as they reminded us so well yesterday, the Diocese of Edinburgh is not just about the city. Beautiful though it is. I was saying something about this at a conference in Rome in the summer, and I said Edinburgh is known as the Athens of the North, and they laughed. But actually it's true. If you've ever been to Edinburgh, it's an incredibly beautiful city. But it goes, if you know that part of Scotland, the diocesan boundary, the Firth of Forth, it goes right along there, right down the east coast to the English border, back along the English border to just past Hawick, the other side of the A7, and back up and in to the west side of Edinburgh, to the Falkirk, and just west of Falkirk area, where the famous Kelpies are. You know what the Kelpies are? I haven't got a pointer, left-hand side, you just have to come and see the Kelpies. We've got about 50 churches in the diocese, half of them in the city, half of them not. And we have clergy and lay leaders and many different people working in different areas of ministry authorised across the diocese. I've been part of the Scottish Episcopal Church all of my life. I was baptised into it at 2.5 weeks old. And I'm thinking back, I think it's about 20 years ago, There was a moment when things changed in the Episcopal Church. And because it's a small province of only seven dioceses, you can't really talk about one diocese without thinking about the Episcopal Church as a whole in many instances. The day after I was deaconed, just about 20 years ago, I was driving over the Forth Road Bridge to go to Perth, which is about an hour north of Edinburgh. Really not got any idea what God was about, because I was going with about 20 other people to train to be a facilitator for something that Selkirk pointed to yesterday. Mission 21, it was called, and it was the first phase of that, make your church more inviting. And I remember driving over the bridge thinking, I don't do mission, God. I don't even use the word mission. It wasn't a word that was used widely in the church at that time, believe it or not. But that was it was a whole week's training with someone that Bishop Richard Holloway, some of you may know his name, he was our primus and Bishop of Edinburgh then. And in the early mid-90s, he knew that the church was going to have to reshape itself in a way for mission in the 21st century. And at some drinks party, well, this is the apocryphal story, I don't know if it's true. At some drinks party in America, he met this woman called Alice Mann from the Alban Institute. And he knew immediately that she culturally and just the way she was would be able to talk to us about these things in a way that we would hear and help to reshape us. So that, I think, was a really, really significant turning point. The whole province engaged in that. Selkirk, you did. I wasn't your facilitator, was I? No, I was Melrose. And over the years since then, a number of congregations have taken that forward. It sounds very kind of simplistic, make your church more inviting, but what congregations had to do was look at their context, think a bit about their history. Well, if we were founded in 1851 as a plant from the next town to serve the mill workers in this town, and there are no mills anymore, what's our purpose and mission now? Welcome and hospitality were put right up there in it too, and any other things that you can remember. It was really looking at our life and our context and what God was calling us to do. And out of that came funding for mission officers in dioceses and a full-time local collaborative ministry officer. Many of you will know and maybe remember Anne Tomlinson. And I worked with Anne for a number of years. I worked in two of the more northern dioceses where we were working together on mission and ministry, where the bishops were fully behind that, and local teams and congregations and education. Education was always very high on the list there, enabling people and enabling their mission at the same time. So that was kind of a microcosm of my story, but it really reflects, I hope, something of what was going on in the bigger story. But when you come to a diocese, back to the Diocese of Edinburgh, and you see a map like this, you go, what on earth has that got to do with the kind of stories that we've been sharing? Because that's the reality. We are governed through a synodical system, as I guess most of you are here, with a house of laity and a house of clergy. Within the Scottish Episcopal Church, there are no suffragan bishops. The bishop appoints a dean to work collegially with them, which is my role. So it's the most undemocratic appointment in the whole Episcopal Church, I think. It's one of the few that aren't elected or appointed. And provosts are rectors of cathedrals. So it's slightly different maybe from some of your own structures. But I think it's really important not just what is there, but how does it work? How do the people interact? What do we do with these structures that canonically are a given? And I think what I've seen evolve in the last few years, especially in my time as dean, is how the language and the culture is changing. I was at a meeting, because as dean I have to sit in nearly every diocesan committee, especially if the bishop's away, and I see a bishop, so you'll know what that's like. But one of my responsibilities is for all the buildings in the diocese, but a lot of that is delegated. But there was this conversation at the buildings committee meeting, and I thought, my goodness, things are changing. Because the question was, well, this is a really good project, and Historic Scotland will agree, and other bodies that we have to apply to will agree. But how will it benefit the mission of their church? Says somebody around the table. That'd be really interesting to know. And that may sound like a tiny thing, but I thought that was a huge thing. The budget being reshaped to focus on mission. The Mission and Ministry Committee is one of the two main pendant committees of Standing Committee, and the Bishop and myself sit on that at every meeting, so that the two-way conversation can always be held about what is happening. So I do see something happening there, that it's as congregations are growing more and more passionate about mission and new developments, that's impacting on the diocese, and as it changes, it's impacting on the congregations. A bit like that old Lex Credendi, Lex Orandi saying, you can't have one without the other. And there's this thing called money. Well, money is not the root of all evil, but it's how you use money, if you have or don't have it. You know, it's how you consider it. And of course, I think someone from Selkirk yesterday said that each congregation has to raise their own funds for all kinds of things. There are grants available, obviously, but that's where we start, and quota is paid to the diocese, and the diocese pays quota to the province. So there's a kind of mutual interdependence at different levels there. But one of these things, as I said, this radical thing to reshape our budget, because we're talking, you know, we're not talking huge amounts of money to start with, but to suddenly find £45,000 for an appointment takes a bit of thinking. And we have this thing called the St Hilda's Fund, famous northeast of England saint. And St Hilda's Church in Edinburgh closed for various reasons, and we would have the same view as Bishop Allen. Nobody wants to close churches. But the decision was taken at the time when the hundreds of thousands of pounds came in for the land from there. What would we do with it? Well, it was invested. And for the first 4 years, we had huge hikes in pensions. I mean, we all have these problems, don't we? So the money was used for grants to congregations to help with the hike in pensions. But when that began to stabilise, we took a proposal. I was convener of the Mission Ministry Committee then. We took a proposal to Synod to use that £30 income a year from that fund specifically for mission purposes. And that has been sustained. And I think that's a great legacy of that church and that fund, that we're able to dedicate £30,000 a year. So congregations can now apply for anything, you know, from around £1,000 to £5,000 that will make a difference to them in their context to help enable their mission. They're not repair grants, but they may be something to do with your building. And that has actually become part of the language as well. So St Hilda is very strongly associated with mission in the Diocese of Edinburgh. But how do we evaluate in our congregations and in our diocese that we're having a holistic view of things? And one of the things that we use, some congregations have already been using and was mentioned yesterday, are the five marks of mission. Not these five marks of mission. I don't know if you know that cartoon. The bruises.
It's a lot more understandable.
Well, yeah, but not these five marks of mission, which are all about scratches and bumps and bruises that you might get as you go around trying to evangelise. But the five marks that can shape our congregation's life, some of them not dissimilar to that passage from the Luke Manifesto. I'm nearly finished, but I do want to just say a little bit more. What would that look like? You know, if congregations are using these marks of mission, what might that look like in their congregation? And if you're proclaiming the good news of the kingdom, it might mean that you are your worship is meaningful and relevant to the world around you. It's not something insular. You're communicating through different means with the local community. You might have conversations individually with somebody you meet at a mutual place of need. That came out of the woman at the well. Both had come to that well for their own reasons, and out of that came something else. To teach, baptize, and nurture Christians, you knew the life of the church. Looking at your church's policies and attitudes to family life, politics, helping faith engage in these discussions, your finances and buildings focused on mission. Responding to human need by loving service, a mark might be offering support for vulnerable people and disadvantaged groups. A recognition in your worship and in your support of the caring professions in your community. Transforming unjust structures, so providing safe places for children and vulnerable adults to meet. Exploring work on violence and injustice, domestic abuse. There are so many things that we and people are living with that the church can help to focus. And the fifth one, to strive to save and guard the integrity of creation. And when you're, you know, thinking about doing things in your church buildings, what about LED? We've got an eco-warrior in my congregation in Edinburgh, and she's brilliant because she asks the provocative questions every time. Well, if you're changing the bulbs, what about this? If you're thinking about heating, what about that? And I think that is really important. And recycling not only in church, but encouraging people to do it at home. There are all ways that we can make a difference. And stipendiary clergy are not always the enemy. Because, this was really exciting, our annual conference a couple of weeks ago, we had with us Paula Gooder. Many of you will know Paula and have worked with her, and she's been with us a few times. And the focus of that whole more than 2 days, 2.5 day conference was the first mark of mission. That's going to be something at each of the clergy conferences. And of course, it was proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and helping us, and we were helping one another too, to think outside the box in ways that along with our congregations, we can begin to do this in a more intentional way. And this is what someone there, she's a great doodler, and she put this up on Facebook. You can't quite see it from there, but there are words like, you know, which we were thinking about the kingdom. What is the kingdom? What are the marks of the kingdom? Deeply political. You know, some of the things that are really language that people outside church can engage with. And probably lastly, mission and leadership. What is the role of leadership in growing mission-shaped ministry and congregations? What does leadership look like? Lots of answers, I would guess. How do we learn collaborative ways? Is it more than being cooperative? Is it more than delegating? You know, what is it really? And there's a deep theology in there somewhere, I think, that needs to be explored more and be more explicit. Because first and foremost, we collaborate with God. And if we're not collaborating with God, then all the rest is just sort of good works, I suppose. I moved from diocesan work back into congregational work 8 years ago. I was asked to think about, and I did apply for being rector of Christ Church, one of the bigger city congregations in Edinburgh. And I really tussled with that because I thought, what all this stuff I've been doing and this person who I am, how is that going to fit with being rector of a city congregation? And yet there was no denying in my mind that it was God's call. But I think what has happened there through God's grace is that we have a very mission-shaped, collaborative congregation that has to be authentic to itself. It can't be a rural congregation, it can't be a seaside congregation, it's a city congregation. How did the collaborative ways of working happen? I'm not quite sure. Jane, who's here, is going to say just a little bit something about how we're training new clergy now in a minute. Is, I think, primarily about being yourself, being the Jesus at the well reminded me of that. I'm new, and it was one of our questions today. I couldn't do everything, and I don't want to do everything, but there were people there with gifts. It's building relationships, it's trusting one another, it's those people graciously allowing you to make mistakes and you allowing them to make mistakes, not trying to be everything and not trying to do everything. I think that there are great models around that that are transforming. Certainly was transforming for me, and I think transforming for the congregation in many ways, because some of the most effective things are not just the committees and the structures, but the small quilting group and knitting group and DIY group that have some members of the church and some not. But the conversations that take place in those safe places. So it's interest groups are a really big thing. In a big church, you've got to have lots of little groups. So you have lots of little congregations. And I'm just going to say this, it wasn't even on my script. But a large church is not a successful small church. And a small church is not a failed large church. Our calling is to be whatever we are. And I have worked in congregations of 3 and 4, right up on the northwest coast of Scotland, that had great mission and outreach. So the size doesn't matter, but size only matters in what God's asking you to do with it. That's where size matters, and you have to pay attention to that. Jane, can you just say, before we finish this, because I mentioned Anne Tomlinson, and Anne is now principal of our Theological Training Institute.
I think that's what I was going to say, actually.
Yeah, but that's your leading.
I come to this and heard what Susan has said from a variety of backgrounds. I am a member of Christchurch and been part of that collaborative way of working for a long time. And I have been in lay leadership. I'm not a lay reader, I'm not licensed, I'm not authorised, but I've been had given amazing opportunities to work collaboratively and looking outwards for a long time. And I was called rather unwillingly, and I'm now in my third year of training for ordination with Anne in the Scottish Episcopal Church. And I was just sharing with Susan that our last weekend of 3 whole solid days was spent around collaborative ministry, mission, outreach. Those of us training for ordination are training for stipendiary, non-stipendiary, MSE, all together from every kind of churchmanship, and with Anne exploring much as we've done here, storytelling, local congregations, ideas, but set within a provincial and a diocesan framework. So it's very much at the heart of the Scottish Episcopal Church.
Thank you. Thank you. And just to say, just as an example, because I know Selkirk put some of their stuff there, this is the 10-year journey of Christchurch in Edinburgh, going from goals that were just kind of goals to moving to a mission action plan that's based on the 5 marks of mission, but it's always work in progress. So that's a sort of other story. So really, you know, it's listening, isn't it? What is God calling us to do, and what is our response? And I think in the end of the day, we just have to get on our bike and trust. Thank you. You're coming back.
Wow, how fantastic to hear that unfolding story, that sense of journey over all those years in that sort of intentional, prayerful way that Susan shared with us. And that encouragement to see diocese, circuits, conferences, deaneries with fresh eyes as collaboratives of people and parishes with God, partners in God's mission. So what we've got now is an opportunity for a couple of things. First of all, for us, in the same sort, using the same sort of process as we used yesterday to help us all to reflect together on Selkirk's story, we're going again to buzz in small groups and then round our tables about encouragements, what we heard that made our hearts sing, where we see signs of God at work, what we want to give thanks for, what we were excited to hear as we heard that story. Secondly, were there things that were challenges or raised questions for us, or we kind of felt a bit uncertain about, or not quite sure about that? And then thirdly, were there aha moments or insights? So those three areas again, the giving God thanks, the wow encouragements, what God's God doing in that story, the questions, the challenges, the issues it raised for you, the ahas, the insights. So first of all, as before, in little threes and fours so that you can share with each other, and then I'll encourage you then to move to sharing in our tables and out into plenary. Away you go.